This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Carrie!
Hello, how are you?
I was trying to think last night if there's a subject on Earth that I know less about than K-pop.
Oh.
You know, what's the band that's huge,
BTS.
Huge. Okay, I've watched them, then I watched them sing some Beatles song to Paul McCartney. K-pop is the pop music of Korea, and Carrie Batten, a music critic for The New Yorker, has been following its development. And recently, K-pop has found a very solid place in the American mainstream, which is still unusual for bands from non-English-speaking countries. But it takes someone who's been listening to the music intently to tell us what's what. And Carrie Batten always knows what's what. Carrie, how did this all start? Has this been going on for decades and we just never noticed and then it exploded in the United States?
So, not exactly. K-pop is one of the few genres where you can actually pinpoint its origin date, which is 1992, and it emerged after a kind of loosening of censorship laws in South Korea. But it wasn't until just a few years ago that K-pop really broke through in the West. I think most people for a long time, their primary association with K-pop was Psy's Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Do you remember that song?
I do.
Yes, of course. How could you forget it?
That was the earworm of the moment.
That was the earworm of the moment. And I think it has something like 500 billion views or something. But so for several years, and that was kind of like a fluke. It was more of a gimmicky song. And I mean, since then, it's evolved quite a bit. You fast forward a few years, you know, and today you can't really talk about K-pop in the United States without talking about BTS, which is, you know, one of the biggest groups in the world, full stop. And they are a seven-man boy band in South Korea. And if you look at the last couple of years in BTS's career, all you see are all of these milestones that they've achieved in America. You know, they reached the top of the Billboard 100 numerous times. They were at the top of the Billboard 200 album chart, one of the first Korean acts to win an American Music Award, one of the first Korean acts to appear at the Grammys, all sorts of things.
How did they take off here? Why did they take off here?
So I think they took off here because I think a lot of it is algorithmic. Like, I think, you know, once something starts to take off on YouTube, then it's going to get served to more and more people who might be interested in it. And a lot of people think that they're kind of an overnight success. But for a long time, they struggled to make inroads in the American market. And they have this manager and their label head whose nickname is Hitman Bang, and he owns one of the biggest record labels in South Korea. And what he did was he really studied the American market, and he kind of, you know, took a lot of steps to tailor their music to American pop audiences. And the BTS was one of the groups that really embraced social media early on. So, you know, publishing YouTube vlogs, going on Instagram, going on Twitter, this kind of thing that a lot of groups in Korea weren't doing at the time.
I have to admit, maybe the first time I saw BTS, and it's quite possibly the most recent and last, was when they appeared on Saturday Night Live.
Ladies and gentlemen, BTS.
Yeah, so this happened last year, and it was the first time that a Korean pop act appeared on SNL where they did their hit single called Boy With Love.
Their stage presentation is pretty amazing. I mean, if it reminds me of anything, it's of the not Michael Jackson, but of the Jackson 5 in some way.
Yeah, you can certainly see that, especially with how intensely choreographed they are and how rehearsed they are. And they've also kind of carved out personas for each one of them, sort of in the same way that the Jackson 5 might have. One thing that is also interesting about K-pop boy bands is their sort of interest in presenting as androgynous. Male K-pop stars wear makeup and they dye their hair and they're sort of flamboyant in their own way. And that's something that definitely distinguishes K-pop from a lot of other genres of music.
So there's a documentary on Netflix about a band called Blackpink. What's that all about? Tell us.
Yeah, so another big South Korean group right now is called Blackpink, and they are a girl group. They just put out their sort of biggest major album to date, and it's called The Album. And right now the big lead single off of that record is called Ice Cream, and it's a collaboration with Selena Gomez. You know, it's very polished, very theatrical, very highly produced. Everybody's kind of having fun in the summer, wearing ridiculous outfits and being very girlish and eating ice cream.
Carrie, who are the big American acts who have kind of collaborated with K-pop acts in order to expand their base and to experiment musically?
So in addition to Selena Gomez, there's also a feature with Cardi B on a song called Bet You Wanna on the album. And the fact that you have Selena Gomez and Cardi B on this record sort of speaks to how big Blackpink is and also how willing these days American pop stars are to collaborate with South Korean artists. You're seeing collaborations all over the place now. You see Halsey with BTS, French Montana with Monsta X. You saw Lil Nas X and Old Town Road doing a remix with BTS. It kind of runs the gamut.
Who else are you listening to in the K-pop realm?
So one group I'm really interested in is another South Korean K-pop all-girl group called ITZY. And there are five of them. And one of their hit songs right now is called Wannabe. And what I really like about Wannabe is that it's very emblematic of K-pop styles, because I think I read a statistic saying that in the average K-pop song, there are 8 to 10 melody changes, which is absolutely crazy. Usually it's only 3 or 4 in an American pop song. And part of what makes K-pop so fun is that, you know, there are often several songs in one song. It goes from EDM to rap rock to hip hop to slow balladry all in the span of a couple of minutes. And this song really symbolizes that.
It's really interesting. This summer, around the time of the protests following the killing of George Floyd, I remember reading about how K-pop fans were mobilizing on Twitter in support of the protests. Can you explain that phenomenon?
Right. Yeah, you're seeing K-pop fans popping up in unexpected places this summer. They've kind of taken an activist bent to their online presence. And when all of the George Floyd protests were happening in early June, what K-pop fans did was they flooded specific hashtags like the White Lives Matter hashtag. And if you clicked on one of these hashtags like hashtag White Lives Matter, what you would see was a kind of endless sea of K-pop dance videos, which was obviously very disorienting to anybody engaging in that content in a kind of political way. Another thing you've probably heard a lot about this summer was the K-pop fans kind of banding together and signing up for tickets to a Trump rally that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And basically what they did was they flooded the ticket signups so that the number of attendees would be kind of grossly overstated. And what you're seeing here is the way that K-pop fans have kind of learned to gamify their online fandom. They know that they have strength in numbers. They know that they have this intensity. And what they kind of do is rally together and sort of see how they can channel their power online towards a variety of different causes or outcomes.
Do you think it's a phenomenon with legs, particularly in this country?
I do want to say that I think that this idea of K-pop being huge in the U.S. is a bit overstated. One thing about K-pop in the U.S. is it doesn't get any radio play on terrestrial radio. It's all streaming. So it doesn't have the kind of household resonance that a lot of...
How much does terrestrial radio matter any longer for the music business?
I think it still matters. Maybe it doesn't matter technically. I think it is still a bellwether. And I think that you're seeing a lot of the labels in Korea kind of struggle to make it further. And it does kind of go back to COVID because arena shows is one of the biggest outlets for K-pop acts to infiltrate the U.S. market. You see them in stadiums all over the place. And so without that option, that could be a little bit difficult to keep making inroads. But I certainly think that the algorithms online have, K-pop has wormed its way into all of them. And so it's not going, you're going to be seeing it online for quite a long time to come.
Well, I've got my YouTube work cut out for me. Carrie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Carrie Batten is a staff writer, and she covers music and much more.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.